Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Yeah. Hey.
So I'm Ryan.
Okay.
That's I don't know which way the screens are for you. For
yeah.
Me, that's Drew.
Okay.
And Ryan, just so you know, so we can get you on board with what's happened this morning is, and it sounds like we all suffer from this on some level. You know, Ryan was up at 5 a.m. this morning. He had done meditation. We have lots of processes in place for keeping ourselves organized, yet we both sometimes miss it Saturday morning when we have a show regularly. Do you suffer from a similar kind of
executive dysfunction?
Yes, thanks, Ryan.
Well, oh, yeah, big time. Like, I right now I'm supposed to be making chili with my wife, so.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel, I mean, I'm laughing. I feel bad for her, but it's just the best of intentions come up against trying to do 6 things at once.
Yeah.
And in my case, in our cases, the three of us, I think trying to do those many things at once is probably a bigger challenge than for the average person. And then if you don't have a partner or understanding, you know, like life partner, work partner, whatever, I think it's, thank God I do.
Yeah.
I just, you know, feel bad for her sometimes, a lot of times. So.
Yeah. Well, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, are you guys, do you want to do this a different day then? Or are we still good for today?
No,
or what?
No, we're good. It's just, okay. we're just laughing because Drew phoned me 10 minutes before 10.
Yeah.
We record every Saturday at 10. And I was about to leave my house because I completely forgot or like had just, and I'd been up since 5 and I was telling Drew, like I had gone for a run. I had breakfast. I worked out, had, you know, all this other stuff. I did clean my kitchen. And in that 5 hours I had been awake, not once had it popped into my head that we were doing a podcast today, even though we do it every Saturday. And I was literally just about to walk out of my house when he phoned me. I was going to go run some errands and stuff. And we were just laughing about how that's just kind of like, this is just life, right? Like the whole kind of, you know, executive dysfunction and working memory. And these are our challenges. So.
Yeah.
And then we saw your email just a moment ago. Yeah. And like, I won't repeat what it said, but it was just like, unless you want to, but I just could totally relate to it.
You can read it. I forget exactly what I said.
It's relevant. If you're cool with it, it's relevant.
Yeah,
so go ahead.
You can't, yeah, go ahead. Be good.
You got it right?
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, because we
I just shut down my computer. I didn't want to. I have too many competing things going on here. Yeah, I want to hear you guys. But
well, we were just like both in Zoom, like, all right, you should be joining us any minute. And then you sent an email that said, I'm ready. Just taking a few moments to adjust and relax. My breathing is too fast to speak normally, so I figured I should calm before we record, since it will sound better if I can speak normally. And which, like, totally get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If more people just took the time to say that message.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, I don't know why, because I don't know if it's the same for either one of you, but I did not, like, I even remembered this morning. Like, it's not like I forgot when I said earlier. It's just, I didn't leave enough time for, you know, going to pick up stuff at Zaire's. I had it in my mind we were doing just on a phone call for whatever reason. And then I realized, oh shoot, I have to shave and shower now. And so, that all
you never have to shave and shower for this show, just for future shows.
Good. Good, good. I couldn't remember, like, I've only ever listened to you on my phone, but I didn't know if you also post anything to YouTube. So I thought but the problem there was then I got so overheated because I right away put my, Zoom stuff on, and I was just sweating because I just got out of a hot shower and got dressed. And I was like, oh, this probably wouldn't happen if it was like, a neurotypical person getting on a podcast about finances. Like, they would have been showered, made their coffee 2 hours ago, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, and I thought, well, of all the people who are going to not care or forgive me anyway, if I'm 10 minutes late, I figured it would be you too.
Yeah. It's all
good. You're all good, man. You're all safe good. Here, bro.
Yeah.
Where do you live?
Kitchener, so not too far.
Oh yeah.
I think, did you say Aylmer? Is that where you are, Ryan? Or
I'm in Bayfield.
Bayfield, right. That's right on the lake, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right on Lake Huron.
Lake Huron. Cool.
And
yeah, I was driving through Bayfield on the way to Goderich in August.
Okay.
I went down there for a day just by myself, just to read on the beach. It was empty and weird. And I was listening to your podcast right when you said something about that as I was driving past Bayfield. So I was like, oh man, I'm creeping on this guy.
Well, that's awesome. That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, the show connects people in strange ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, thanks for coming on. And like, how did you I'm always curious how you discovered the show to begin with.
I was trying to, you know, catch up on 40 years of ignorance. I think, was it 2 years ago or a year and a half ago you started?
Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah.
You had maybe two episodes up, and you were kind of going through things in parallel to where I was.
Okay, yeah.
And I must have just searched on, what app do I use? I think I use Overcast for podcasts.
Yeah.
And I just searched autism or maybe Asperger's or both, and then you came up. And so right away I thought, man, I really want to, not that I have anything to say, because I probably know less about all this than you do at the point.
Well, I know nothing.
But I thought, man, if there's anything I can do to keep this podcast going, I'll do it. Because I thought, like, at the time, there's a couple people doing stuff like this, but they would go for 5 to, you know, maybe 15 episodes, and then life would get too heavy or too hard, or it would be something, you know, the podcast was something the podcaster had to jettison from life just to, mm-hmm. you know, survive. And so I thought, man, whatever I can do to help yours keep going, I will. And of course, then it took me a year to email you about it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. I mean, yeah, it's something that it's been challenging. I think it's maybe a year and a half or so ago that I started doing it. And I think in that year and a half, probably only put out 12 episodes or something. So, you know, there, you know, which speaks to the sort of executive function side of it and just, you know, real life gets in the way. And now Drew, who I've known a long time, just came on board to help produce the show with me and help kind of keep me on track. And so the plan right now is this year to just commit to doing one a week and just keep it out there and just keep having these conversations. So, you know, it's awesome. So can you tell us a bit about your autism story? Like, you know?
Yeah. There we go. So I've always struggled with certain things and, you know, people and early on, so I'm in my 40s. So when I, early 40s, when I was in elementary school, I had a couple kind teachers and a lot of teachers who just thought I was just being an idiot and needed to smarten up. And so, you know, people kindly or unkindly let me know that there was problems with me and I wasn't, you know, acceptable from a very young age. And I'm still trying to work that out and get those monkeys off my back now. And so then trying to, without knowing what I was doing, trying to mask and try to fit in, I never got good enough that I was acceptable to people at passing as neurotypical, but I got good enough that no one ever said to me until a few years ago, hey, you know, you might be autistic. You remind me of my husband, or, you know, a woman said that to me and I thought, oh, so that's strange. But so I went to talk to someone about it and he just laughed at me in a super rude way too. So it didn't, that kind of turned me off the whole process. And he was a psychiatrist and he said something about, his main question to me was, where do emotions come from? And so I thought, what? So I gave as good an answer as I could about my limited understanding of like the evolutionary processes that led to it and how they are adaptive. And then he said, no, I mean, like, why do you smile sometimes? And anyway, and then, you know, he asked me to leave the room and I heard him speaking to another person who was there, I think for training purposes. He just laughed at me. He goes, this guy doesn't even know where emotions come from and he thinks he's autistic and blah, blah, blah. So I heard that. I went back in. I said, I heard everything you said and I'm going to leave. And he apologized. So for two more years then, that was like 3 years ago, for two more years, I just went around thinking, well, it's just me. I just have character flaws. But really, like, that's probably, now that I know a little bit more, that's probably like the most autistic answer you could give to where do emotions come from.
I was way just thinking that.
Yeah.
I was just thinking that. It's like such a literal answer of like, wow, yeah, I know. If you look back at the evolution of blah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Monkeys pick each other's back. They get flies off each other, blah, blah. Anyway, and then so, and then it finally got to the point where I changed jobs and the new job was, I love it, but it was a lot more FaceTime with big groups of, not like meetings, lots more meetings and stuff like that than I was accustomed to. And the wheels started falling off. Like, I don't know if people would have noticed that around me, but like I got to the point where I just could hardly think and function when I got home.
Yeah.
And starting to go to bed at 5 o'clock. And I was like, that's strange. So then I went I Googled it and I found the, what's the name of that center in Guelph? You went there too, right around the same time I did.
Yeah, the ADHD Asperger's Center, I think.
Yeah. So I went there, I think a couple months before you mentioned it. So I was like, oh, that's great. And you know, both people I saw there were like, oh, well, it's pretty obvious. Like,
yeah.
So I went through that process, but it was just really frustrating because, you know, not knowing that for so long, none of the people I grew up with noticed because they just always just thought I was weird. And those who stuck with me were fine with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And no one else, if they either no one else noticed or no one else felt comfortable telling me. And then, you know, having a professional. I now know you should not go to a psychiatrist about stuff like this, because their ignorance, and I don't mean that in a slanderous way, but their lack of knowledge is profound. But I didn't know that then. And it was just really frustrating being told, no, you're fine. Just some one guy told me to get a hobby. And I was like, I don't think I need another special interest. Like, that's not going to help.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
I mean, that's one of the things that I one of the reasons I want to be having these conversations is just so people understand the experience you just described of going to a psychiatrist or somebody who's not trained in this, doesn't know what to look for, doesn't know how it presents in undiagnosed adults. And then, you know, I had a psychologist I went to see who it was summer, so I had short sleeve shirt on and I have a couple tattoos on my arms, and she said, well, autistic people can't get tattoos. It just was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I went back to like a support group I'm in London for autistic people, and I was like, do any of you have tattoos? And like half them in the room were like, yeah, I do.
Yeah, me too.
Like, so it's like, but like these little things that like these people would believe, and I'm not dissing that particular psychologist. I'm sure she's probably wonderful at her job, but it's just, this is just an area she doesn't know about. So it was just like, I was like, so I walk in here with it and I've got a tattoo. So I just, that's the end of the conversation in your mind. You've already just decided, like, it's so weird.
Yeah.
But, so you were, when you went through the thing with the place in Guelph, is this pre-COVID? Like, was it in person?
It was, a little bit more than a year ago, excuse me. And, it was good. And I guess I just remembered right now. I had even written this out, but I forgot that the reason about a year, a little more than a year ago, what led to this is I was on Twitter, and the guy from Weezer, the band, tweeted out, I just got such and such score on the Aspie test.
Wow.
And I just figured, okay, Aspie probably means Asperger's, and that makes a lot of sense having seen interviews with them.
Yeah.
And so that percolated for a day. And then I was like, oh, well, I should take that, because I mean, I don't know. It just felt like a fun idea. And then I scored like almost perfect on it. And I was like, that's interesting. Like, I think I had, it might be out of 50. So I was like in the high 40s. And I thought,
this is the AQ test you're talking about, right?
I think, yeah, it's the one by Simon. Is it Baron Cohen? Something like that. Yeah. And so I was in the high 40s, and I thought, oh man, like, so I got my wife to do it. I was like, okay, so do it for yourself. And she was like, way below whatever the line was.
Yeah.
And then I said, can you do this with me in mind? And she got in the low 40s for me. And I thought, okay, well, I better pursue this. And I told a guy I worked with, and he was younger than me. And 10 years younger. So he grew up with kids with the diagnosis. It was probably called Asperger's, but with whatever, ASD1 would be what it is now. And he said, oh my God, I just assumed you knew that. How, like, you just found out yesterday?
Wow.
And I was like, oh, fuck. If you, like, I wish you would have told me that 6 months ago. It would have been great.
Yeah, 6 years ago, whatever.
So he knew about you.
Oh, yeah. And he... like he later said, like, in that conversation he was nice and sweet, but later we joked about it, and he said, like, he could not believe like, he was actually the first person I told, because we worked together so closely. I was like, I better just to take some of the tenseness away, if there's whatever social pressure, awkwardness away. And he just laughed. Like, he was like, it was so obvious to him, and he didn't even ever bring it up, because he just, like, it wasn't, it was like, if I came to him and I said, you know, I have brown hair.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you don't usually say to someone, so I see you have brown hair. He just was like, it's obvious. It's, he must know.
Yeah.
And I was like, no one ever told me that.
Was he accepting?
He is a good guy, and I would say yes. From my perspective, I think so. Like we're not friends, so it's a lot easier when I think when you like we're work friends. There's a difference. But I would say, yeah, he was a good colleague for sure.
Yeah.
But again, he's younger, and you know, I think I'm at. I have looked into it a while ago. I think I'm at like the second or third year of generation. What is it again? Oh, the millennial generation. He's like at the very end of it. And I think like there's a lot of change in those 10 years as far as people deciding, oh, maybe we shouldn't like hate, you know, gay people or people who are different. Maybe that's a good idea.
Yeah.
And those
maybe we
years,
shouldn't run around calling everyone fags and retards all the time. Like,
yeah.
Which yeah. is how it was when yeah. I grew up, you know?
Totally. Totally. I watched 40-year-old Virgin the other day and the amount of gay this and gay that was like I had to turn it off. It's a great movie, but
yeah,
it's not relevant.
That movie.
Yeah,
it's a good barometer on the whole like gay fag thing that you guys are saying.
Yeah,
right. Okay.
Wow. It's funny, like that. I had like my. I think I've probably talked about this before, but like when I did the, I had taken that, done that AQ test a few times over the years, and it was like I always scored on it like. You know, high, and was just like, but then I just, you know, part of that thing where you just go, but I don't look like what I think autistic people are supposed to be, like Rain Man or something, you know? So I was like, I don't understand why I'm scoring high on this. And then when I started kind of in the last, you know, year and a half or so, like actually reading and learning and going, oh, okay. Like it's, you don't have to be Rain Man to be autistic. And then I took that test and I scored like, I don't remember, like 44, 45, something like that. And I think it says like 33 and up is possible autistic. And then like high 30s and 40s is like almost definitely. And then I was like, I got three of my buddies to take the test just to give me sort of a control group. And they all scored around like 19, 20.
Yeah.
And then I was like, seven. I was like, oh, okay. So there is something here. Like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's always nice to ace a test though, right?
Yeah, I like that you said that you scored perfect almost. When you phrased it.
Sorry, it just made me spit out my coffee.
I know. I waited till you were sipping.
Yeah, it's nice to ace a test.
It is, yeah.
Put it on the fridge.
So did you get your wife to take the test? What did you say? She got a low score?
Yeah, like it was now, first of all, it was, I think Simon, I'm on a first name basis with him for some reason because I've read and watched so much of his stuff, but Simon Baron Cohen, I believe I might have heard him say, or someone else anyway, say that test was definitely written to catch or to notice more stereotypically male traits.
Yeah, that too.
And when I say that, what I mean by that is whatever, you know, male stereotypical autistic behavior might be. And I don't mean any kind of gender thing by that. I mean, just as a simple label of someone who might prefer wrestling to like a conversation, like that kind of stereotype. And so it might be that my wife would score higher if it was written for someone like her. Cause in my, you know, I work with kids and I read this book called Asperger Girls. Is it Rudy Simone? Right.
Might be. Yeah. I have that book somewhere.
Anyway, so I wish everybody would read that book. I mean, not everybody, but everyone who works with people or is, you know, a parent or whatever. It's a great audiobook too. It's not, some books are so technical they don't work as audiobooks, but in my opinion Asperger Girls is a good audiobook, and I certainly see that in many of, not many, but it, you know, in some of the young women I work with. And so I think perhaps unless that test has been updated, perhaps it is not going to catch a lot of the females. But the other thing I wanted to not forget to say was, because gender is, I want to avoid all the controversy around it, but at the end of the day, there are certain kind of relevant stereotypes, but I don't fit in all of them. Like I'm definitely just like a normal man, in this sense, there's nothing very unusual about me or interesting or special, but I also have, probably fit more into the Asperger Girls category.
Yeah.
For a lot of the things, just because, I'm less interested in sports or a lot of guy things. Like, I cannot have those conversations. Uh-huh. I'm a bit more on the nerdy, like, conversations about like small talk with guys, because I don't know any of the references. And so the Asperger's thing, I think maybe if my teachers when I was young had read Asperger's, they would have looked at me and said, see, but he's standing on the outside of groups, not actually connecting because he doesn't know how. Yeah. I wasn't sitting in the corner like stacking bricks. Like, I had a, I knew someone who did that when he was little, and I'm pretty sure he's autistic. But for me, it was never stuff like that. It was all these trying to socialize.
Yeah.
And faking it. Did you, Ryan, did you say something about you would go to parties and like go from group to group just to try to be there, and right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, stuff like that. That might be, some people could possibly see that as more, you know, in the Asperger's kind of category, and maybe
the little bit I've read about that topic, like I feel like you do. I feel like I'm sort of in that subgroup of men that sort of fit a lot of the stereotypically female autistic traits as well.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
It's sort of strange, which is, I think, more of a contributing factor to people like us getting missed with diagnosis at a younger age, because we're not fully in that like male autistic thing. And again, trying to be careful with language right now, because I don't know what
I know. I don't know how to
set about right now.
All I mean is that I'm just trying to be descriptive and not normative or anything, right?
Yeah, so. For sure. Yeah.
Is the word androgynous like at all relevant? Just because, like, I think even in the neurotypical community, androgynous people are able to exhibit and portray both male and female emotion and traits. I just get that these sort of archaic ways of determining autism really should just be brought up to speed, almost, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and I can't comment on the androgynous thing because I've recently learned that I don't have any sense of what I look like or how people would perceive me. So I have no idea, but I don't dispute it. I just don't have any idea. Ryan, does that feel like correct to you?
I don't really know. I don't really know that, like, how to I don't really know the definition of that word in this context to be able to respond to it, really. I'm not really sure.
Okay, so I'll stop looking through the dictionary for big words.
No. You know what? I feel like I know what androgynous means in a general sense, but in this
sort of, I mean it emotionally. Emotionally. Like the idea of internalizing interaction and communication, like, kind of as Phil was saying, through a not a entirely male perspective. I meant it emotionally.
I certainly feel like it's okay. Here's a little example of just the other day. I was with some friends, and my daughter and another friend with their two kids, so my daughter and then a boy girl, but all between the ages of, say, like 4 and 9, right? These five kids playing. We all went to meet at a toboggan hill. Within 90 seconds of getting there, the three girls had gone off together to find a big snow pile where they were making it, they were pretending it was a castle. And it was all about the three of them working together, having conversations, deciding which room is this room and your room is this room and this is the ballroom. And so this is their play. The two boys were just on the two GT snow racers taking turns going down the hill, having races, seeing who could get further, who could go faster. So it was more about them doing like an activity, almost competing with each other, egging each other on, but focused on their individual prowess in that activity. Whereas the girls, they abandoned the sleds and they were just in this make-believe land where it was all about communication and conversation and cooperation and working together. the parents, we're all standing there at the top of this hill watching this go down, and we're kind of having this conversation of, isn't that interesting? And I kind of feel like when I was a kid, I would have been more comfortable with those girls having some kind of imaginary, but it's not exactly right. I was into boy things. Like, I wanted to put on camouflage and play war, but I wanted to do it in a group and it be about conversation and cooperation and deciding. I was less into like a physical activity, like let's compete jumping or something, or you know what I mean? Does that make sense? Probably because I have dyspraxia too, and I'm just like, ugh, and would fall down and can't do anything physical. So I don't know. I feel like maybe there's somewhere in the middle. Like I was always interested in like those, like conversation, communication, cooperation, mm-hmm. those types of things, but still in like, maybe like I wasn't interested in princesses. I still wanted to talk about G.I. Joes, yeah. but I wasn't like interested in like motorcycles and jumping cars and, or whatever, like
yeah.
mechanical things. So I don't know if that answers your question or if that was just a completely useless waste.
No, it's great.
Last 5 minutes.
That made sense to me.
Yeah. So how do you feel about that?
Kind of the same, like, as far as the parental aspect of it, like I have two wonderful daughters, young, still, both less than, 9 and excuse me. I don't always know how to do all the imaginative play. So I felt especially bad for the older one, because she was like, okay, let's play kitchen. And I'd think like, I would want her to show me how to do that. I wouldn't ask her. I just try to follow her. But she's 1.5 and doesn't know really how to play either. And I was like, I asked my wife, like, what am I supposed to do? And she's like, just play. And I was like, I don't understand the point of this. Like, what? I didn't have a problem with it, but I was just like, what's my angle here? Like, not my angle, what's my hook? Like, but it turns out, I finally figured out, you're just supposed to sit there and actually pretend you're making a dinner and then eating it. And that's, but it took me like 3-4 years to understand that. Mm. So like, there is those certain gender stereotypes, which I don't fall into. Like, as much as I try to, I don't need more, but I try to steer away from all the, I hate most Disney stuff. Personally, it annoys me. I don't get it. And you know, but they loved it. And so the little bit of it, we'd have allowed them to watch TV and movies wise, they right away angled in on playing princess and sometimes lions and cool stuff that I understand.
Yeah.
so there's that aspect of it. But then there's the part where if I have to go to a social gathering, I won't have much to say to most of the other guys. There'll be some guys like me, and that's always great to try to find someone else who doesn't know about usual guy stuff and wants to just talk one-on-one in a quieter spot. Like, that's ideal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, like, I just find myself standing beside my wife, listening to and occasionally contributing to the conversation she's having with women, because it just, whatever, for whatever reason, that those interests line up more. Mm-hmm. For example, like, my favorite show would be currently would be New Girl, and I mentioned nice. That in a group of people recently, and most of them laughed, and I didn't understand, like, not in a mean way, and I didn't understand why, but apparently, like, that's a show 100% aimed at women, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I think it's the funniest thing. And so stuff like that, I think, causes even more trouble for people diagnosing, because like I said, I'm not doing some of those traditional boy autism things, but also socializing, because a lot of times, especially if you don't know people, I'm told, and this could be wrong, but I was told this by a therapist recently, that women will often be more comfortable with other women just for obvious historical safety reasons, which I totally understand.
Yeah.
But that meant that when I would in the past, you know, just start talking with someone, she would I'm told anyway, she might very often wonder what does he want from me? And really, I just was bored and trying to talk to someone, but she thought like, is he hitting on me? Does he not know that I know that his wife is right over there? So anyway, there's all these other things where it causes both, I think, diagnosis issues, but also my tendency to prefer talking to women and or stereotypically more female topics or traits. Again, yeah. Hopefully people are understanding. I'm just trying to be descriptive and not normative or judgmental, but that mm-hmm. also causes even more social issues because I wasn't aware of the dynamic of some women being very uncomfortable talking to men they don't know very well or whatever it is, or being worried, like, is he hitting on me? Or I didn't know that. Yeah. I had no clue. So there's more rejection or people walking away. And then, you know, it's just, it's really hard. It's like another obstacle or burden, I would say.
Yeah.
Not understanding this stuff. So,
anyway. I think about that too. Like when I was in like high school, I would often, like my high school girlfriend, she had her little circle of friends and I would often just hang out with them and I could just sit there in a circle with that, you know, 3, 4, 5 women and just spend the whole afternoon talking to them. And I was just like, it was just, that was just normal for me. And it's just like, I wasn't playing football or doing any of that. Like I still had guy friends, but it wasn't even like I had some guy friends and we got really into like skateboarding. And I was never good at it. A couple of my friends were really good, but I'd go out and hang out with them skateboarding. But for me, my favorite part was always like when everyone's tired and taking a break and like sitting down on your skateboards and just shooting shit and like having a pop or something to, cause you're, you know, you're sweating and you're thirsty. And like, that was always my favorite part. So it's like, the actual skateboarding itself for me was just a means to like have sort of a safe place to be with friends. But then like the end, when we were just sitting around talking afterwards was like what I really wanted. It wasn't the actual
sport activity
itself that did really anything for me. Cause for me, it was just more frustrating than anything else. Cause I'm super uncoordinated and just would fall down the whole time. But I don't know. It's funny looking back on this stuff because at the time you don't know what it is, you know, or like.
Well, you want to go skateboarding?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do.
I tried that once, and my God, I would probably die if I did any of that jumping and like going. What do you call like empty pools, whatever that is?
Half pipe. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did that once. Someone just said do it, and I'm sometimes impulsive. And so I did it and I just closed my eyes and I was at the bottom, but I was still on the skateboard. So I stepped off and I just said, dear God, never again. That was stupid. But
you dropped in. This guy
I did. I'm told I looked like incredibly physically awkward, like some type of like albatross or something. But I was like, I did it and moving on.
Oh my God.
But, I was going to ask what you guys thought, and probably more for Ryan. Cause Drew, I think, my guess is you would find socializing easier than I do.
I mean, I think I'm realizing through this show that I actually have been masking so much large group socializing for so long. Like, this is my jam, man. Like talking to open-minded people in a quiet room. The older I get, the more research that I do, bro, I'm finding that I really don't like large groups.
Okay.
And yeah, I think right. I've like just starting to like tear off some of the layers that are like some of the fake ways of dealing with it. And you know, this is just like a totally unrelated thing, but like I haven't been drinking for a few months, and that act has actually made me realize that drinking was a big part of the mask I wore socially too.
Right. So, yeah. No, I hear people say that. Like I've never really wanted to self-medicate or whatever with alcohol or drugs. It just, probably because I had a distant family member, but someone I saw regularly who was an alcoholic from a young age. And I just thought like that turned me off all that. Like he would just scream when he was drinking, he would start watching sports and then start screaming the N-word at football games.
Jesus.
And then my parents would say, okay, we're leaving. Right.
Yeah.
So that was my impression of drinking and being a very black and white thinker.
Right.
I just always thought I don't want to be that guy. So I never did, but,
in sports too, probably on some level.
Yeah, although I did track and football and rugby because I liked running and stuff. So I like playing sports, just not talking about them or thinking about them or watching them. But what I was going to say to both of you then is I recently listened to a lecture or speech or whatever given by a British woman. I think her name's Sarah Hendricks or Hendrickson. She's married to a man with autism. Her kids, I think, are all autistic. And I think she's some type of autism researcher, therapist, or something. And, it, you know, when she was about my age, I believe, she found out she was also autistic, which is both funny and sad because, I mean, she had a lot of clues, but again, they were none of them directed at her.
And she was already an autism researcher.
She was in the field somehow and her whole family. Wow. And then it just came to her one day, apparently. And so I was listening to her and she said, one of the things she says to young people or to anyone who's recently found out they're autistic, she said, you know, a lot of people come to me saying, help me make friends. And then I say to them, do you know what that means? And yes, people do. And she says, no. Do you know what that means for you and your energy output and your mental, physical, emotional, spiritual commitments to that process? Those are my words summarizing her, so I hope I got it right. Mm-hmm. And people often say no, because I never thought about it. So I was listening to it while driving, and I said no out loud, and I was like, no. And then she said, you have to like talk to them all the time and invite them over and like be affable and hospitable and talk about boring shit most of the time from my perspective. Not that they're boring, but the awesome things other people could say they usually don't want to, and they would rather it's good for them, and I don't have any problem with small talk, but like I can't do it. I can't. And I don't know at what point I could say something that would be to me more relevant and interesting, and if I say it too soon, I think it backfoots people. And anyway, so she was talking about all these things you'll have to do and how much energy it takes. Then I finally, and this is like 2 weeks ago, by the way. And I realized like, I absolutely don't want to and can't do any of that, or I would have to quit my job, stop being an effective parent, and not have any energy or time for my wife, who's awesome. So it occurred to me, like, I don't want to maybe ever talk to anyone ever again. it was a dark Christmas. That's where I was at Christmas time.
Wow. Year.
Oh my God.
I know.
It's so brilliant, real. Though. It's so brilliant. Yeah. Like, I want friends. And then it's like, do you really? And it's like, oh, well, no, I don't.
Mm-hmm. No. And I care about people, and people I used to socialize with and don't anymore. Like, I wish the best for them. Yeah. And if they needed help moving and I was physically had the energy, spiritually, emotional energy to do it, physical energy to do it, I would.
Yeah.
But there's kind of like one guy who I've known just since grade two or something. And he's a good guy. And, you know, I want to keep in touch with him for sure. And spend the energy there. And there's other people who, if they call, and they don't usually because you drift away from people, I would, but I'm just at the point right now, and maybe this will change, where I'm not interested in pursuing anything. And that's something I've always tried to improve, but it just occurred to me finally, like, why? Was that part of my masking? Did I just look around and see, okay, people socialize and have friends, and therefore... Yeah. I don't want to be the bad kid my teachers and peers are implying that I am. So that's one possibility, that I was just masking that way or being very black and white and thinking, well, that's what people do. So I'm people. So people will do that. I'll do that. Or do I actually want to do that? But now I'm just so deep in what I've learned is called autistic burnout that maybe... Maybe right now I can't even conceive of being back in a spot where I would want to.
Or maybe there's you've like gained so much back energy wise that you're just like, fuck that. I don't want to put more on my plate.
Yeah. See, that's where it is. And to be honest with you, I'm, I'm actually when we are like, I'm in a very bad place. Not in a dark, like sad place, but like a couple months ago, my brain just shut down. Like, and I stopped being able to function. Like I was coming home at 5, kissing my children. I had to work a bit later just to try to get everything done. Come on. And then I'd say I'm going to go have a quick nap, and I'd wake up to put them to bed.
Yeah.
I stopped, and there was one day, in December, had nothing to do with Christmas or lockdown busyness, but like just normal life stuff. And my wife was talking to me, and I was trying to respond to her. And, for about a minute and a half, like I was nonverbal. I don't know if that's the right way to, I know some people are, and I'm sure their situation is much, much more difficult than mine, but I couldn't speak. I couldn't respond to her. Like, I'm very visual in my thinking, and I felt like I was standing against a wall with my lips on the wall, and I couldn't force sound through. Mm-hmm. And I thought, my God, is that how some people live their lives? Like, it was so frustrating, and thank God I can speak, but like I couldn't speak. And that's when I thought, okay, something's given here, or something's not snap, but broken. And so I had to just stop and drop. And when we're done here, I'm going to need a nap. And I've never been a napper, because when I wake up from a nap, I'm more tired usually, because I don't know why. But there'll be nothing left. My brain won't work.
Yeah.
And I want to take the kids sledding this afternoon, maybe even take the toboggan. And if I want to do that, like, and drive safely, it's going to mean sleeping for a while, and I'm enjoying this.
Yeah.
But right now, being in the middle of this, for me, unprecedented type of, I'll just call it autistic burnout, and people can Google that if they're interested.
Yeah.
All I have right now is the ability to speak to you two. But that's because I've saved up. I went to bed at 7 last night and slept till about 7:30 today, because I knew it was going to be so that whole burnout thing is another thing I wanted to mention, because I didn't know about it. And I went to my doctor last year, not last year, like 6 months ago, and I said, this is how I'm feeling. And he said, it just sounds like you're depressed, could possibly be, we were just coming into the nice weather at the time. And he said, it could have been because of winter. It could have been all these things. So take up a hobby, try to do more and exercise more. So I tried that, but that actually just made it worse, because that's excellent advice, I think, probably for neurotypicals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But for me, my brain was saying stop or else, and I didn't.
Yeah.
And now that I haven't, like, I don't know. Kind of right now, I don't know what the future holds. I don't know, do all of these skills and abilities or normal desires, like to socialize, do those come back? Did I mask and do this wrong, subjectively wrong, for so long? Have I strained the motor to the point where it's broken and can't get back to 100? Like, I don't know. So anyway, I just wanted other people to possibly maybe be able to get ahead of this, especially people late diagnosed, and maybe know that if your body is saying slow down, and someone, a trusted and a friendly and nice medical professional, tells you something that feels really wrong, mm-hmm. maybe they're right, but maybe you're right, because they have a simple literal ignorance about autism, just because they actually don't know. Anyway, that's that.
Man, that's like,
whew. So good. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. That's like,
yeah.
That's mm-hmm. really important stuff, I think, for people to hear and to know. It's hard to, I think, man, you just described it really well, because I find it's something, it's one of those things that I find it's hard. It's hard to describe to neurotypical people what that feels like in a way that mm-hmm. like makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
and this is part of like something that I've struggled with my whole life, is like internalizing all of the like kind of guilt and shame and feeling like you're not trying, or like, well, just get outside and do more and exercise more. Yeah. And you're just like, but I like, there's, it's like, how do you, it's this feeling of just like, there's nothing in there to power that, you know,
mm-hmm.
like I have, I'm just in the last year, like learning how to be okay with when I need to just power down and just like, because there's always a to-do list, right? There's mm-hmm. always a to-do list, and I'll have these days where I've got the day planned and I got to do this and this, and it's all going to happen, and I'm going to, and then I just get up and it's like,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, sometimes I just literally don't leave the couch for the entire day. And it's not that mm-hmm. I'm depressed, and it's not that I feel tired in a normal way. It's just that there's something else happening where it's like my brain just needs to turn off. And can't, it's like the engine's been running hot or something and just needs like, mm-hmm. I don't know the exact words, but it's hard to describe in a way that isn't just like in feeling this sort of guilt and shame around, well, how come I can't just do all the normal things every day that everybody does that mm-hmm. are like, I sometimes like, you know, some days like today I cleaned my bathroom and I was fine. Some days I clean my bathroom and that's the only thing I'm going to do that day. It's like, that's it. It took everything I had to clean the bathroom and that's it. And that's my entire day. And then I will spend the rest of the day feeling shame and guilt around not doing anything else, but I just am like spent. And then it's like, I'm learning how to be okay with that, like to accept it and not keep beating the shit out of myself about it.
But yes.
at the same time, it's not easy because I've spent 40 years kind of like thinking that I should be able to do these things or should be able to socialize, you know, like,
yeah,
like, you know, it's, yeah, I don't know.
You're getting it. I wanted to ask you also, both of you, about the following, you just brought up two things I wanted to mention. One, spoon theory. I found that kind of helpful explaining to either neurotypicals or people who might be autistic and just are, you know, behind me on the path of figuring what it means, figuring it all out.
Yeah.
They might only be one step behind, but any way you can help someone is helpful. Yeah. Redundant. But so I wanted to ask you about spoon theory, if that helps you understand yourself and if that helps other people understand. The other thing I wanted to ask you was kind of, the term just flew out of my mind, but it might be models of disability or something like that, whereby the traditional, I think, way of seeing disability is it's centered on the person. The person can't somehow function in ways that they need to. And if there is something, quote, wrong with that person, there could be a spectrum where you're just, for example, just a little bit, maybe you can't see clearly, you need glasses, that might not be a disability, to the point where you are blind. And therefore considered in this traditional way of seeing it as defect or not, what's not defective, unable, because your vision is defective in this old way of seeing it or potential old way of seeing it. There is, you know, that person can't get by, so they need help. The other way of looking at it, a different model is kind of the societal model. And again, these terms might be incorrect, but the idea is, am I disabled? And it's on me, so to speak, in my developmental whatever, or is it the way we have structured our society to require only kind of, it's not quite cookie cutter, because there is some variation in what would work. Like I said, mm-hmm. you could wear glasses and not be considered disabled, whereas you would have maybe been totally vision impaired, like 150, whatever, long ago. But so those two competing models, I'm sure there's other ones too. So where do you guys come down on the spoon stuff, the spoon theory, and the disability models?
Yeah, I find spoon theory helpful. I find like just that idea of hey, you might just be starting your day with less spoons than most people.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I
because you spent them yesterday.
Yeah.
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 And
or 3 days or even 4 days ago and it's catching up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know. I mean, I think I struggle with this sometimes because I think I always try to find physical analogies to compare, to like explain stuff to people, because I feel like because this stuff is invisible, I just feel like sometimes when I'm trying to explain it, I feel like I'm just sounding like a crazy person. Cause I, you know what I mean? Like, it's always such a thing where I'm like, I feel like it's this invisible thing you try to explain to somebody. And I've had, without throwing anybody under the bus here, but in the last year and a half, I've had some people in my life very, very close to me who were not supportive and who just like would say things like, you're just making excuses and you're just trying to, and it's like, fuck, I'm starting to, it's like really hard. That shit's really hard because it's like, you're struggling so much and you're trying to understand what's happening and you're trying to figure it out. And you're trying to have these conversations with people that are supposed to, love you.
Yeah.
And then you get this like,
backlash, bullshit.
Oh, you just don't want to do it. You're just trying to get out of doing this thing. You're just trying to make excuses, and you're just like, that just piles it on even worse, you know? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, as far as the models of disability goes, I mean, I do feel like I've, and it's so funny because I've had this feeling ever since I can remember, since being a little kid. I've just always felt so out of place, but I had this feeling like somewhere in the universe, there's an environment where I would fit in perfectly. Mm-hmm. Like I'm just in the wrong place. Like I'm just an alien on Earth, but there's some planet where there's everyone's like me, and I wouldn't have these struggles or this disability because I would just be fine. Or even within my life, like if there was like a, like the idea to me of doing like a 40-hour work week, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week is just fucking insane. Like I cannot maintain that at all. I just crash and burn and crumble into a pile of ash. Like I just can't keep that up for more than like a few months before I just start getting fucking tics and shit. So
yeah.
It's like, so what does that mean? It means, well, I have to work less. So it means I make less money. So it means I have those issues around that, or it means I change jobs a lot because I burn out all the time. Well, then then you have this like financial problems, self-esteem problems. You get viewed at as a fuck up and a failure and all this shit. And it's like, I just have to find the environment that works. I feel like somewhere out there, there's somebody that could fucking hire me and go, I love how you think. I love what you're capable of. I love your creativity. And I just want to like hire you for you and work whatever way makes sense for you. Just get the job done. But that's not the structure. Like I've had jobs where like I had an office job years ago and I hated being in the office because the environment was terrible for me. And I would go in on weekends and work when the office was empty and I would get all my work done. But then I was getting shit on because I would not want to come in during the week as often. And I'd be like, well, why don't I just come in Saturday and I'll do like a 12-hour day on Saturday and I'll get all my shit done. Well, you can't do that. You have to be here. And I'm like, well, why? Because it looks bad. I'm like, but who cares what it looks like? Well, then other people will want special considerations. And I'm like, but you hired me to do a job. If I do the job, if I come in at 5 p.m. and I work till midnight when no one else is here, but I get the job done, what's the difference? But I mean, back then I didn't know I was autistic. I didn't know why I was having these anxiety attacks in this office environment, but it's stuff like that where you go, you know, you're talking about like, am I disabled or is it the world? And it's like, if a job like that just went, yeah, sure, we don't care. Get the job done. Come in on weekends, come in at night when the office is empty. We don't give a shit. You have this mm-hmm. job to do. When you're done that job for the week, you're done. Like, then I could mm-hmm. just, I could come in on like, you know,
any day,
a couple nights, and on one day a weekend, and I could get everything done in less time mm-hmm. it would take me to do it while I'm at the office, because there's no distractions.
Yeah. But,
so I don't know. I'm sorry. I just fucking rambled, but I.
No, man, it's good.
It's good. I'm kind of, it cut out for me. Like, I missed everything you said from about 10 seconds ago to about 30 seconds ago.
Oh, okay.
I'll have to listen to it later. But what I wanted to say to you was, work stuff aside, like, I hope you kind of feel like you have found that world where you exist and you're exactly right here, because I'm feeling that from you now. And I think that's why this is not like me. I would never come and do something like I'm doing right now if you hadn't have created this place where we can be us. Like, nothing either one of you have said was the least bit annoying or different or frustrating to me. And hopefully it's the same for me. Whereas if I was talking to most people, I would be really frustrated after an hour, because I'd think, like, why have you said almost nothing that I'll remember tomorrow?
Yeah.
And why have you made me bad for not being, why have you made me, not you, but other people, other places, why have you made me feel bad for being me? Whereas that's not happening here at all.
Can I just say something that I think is amazing, that is, which is why I'm laughing, is because for you to say nothing you guys have said has annoyed me, to me, it's like, that's such a compliment. That's such a compliment. But like, a neurotypical person would not take that as a compliment. They would be offended.
But like, dude, I'll go make a coffee and I will annoy my wife in 10 fucking seconds.
But like, that is such an autistic compliment, I think. Like, nothing you guys have said is like annoyed me or offended me. So, and I'm like, that's great.
Whereas that's like, go ahead, Phil. Phil, you had something brilliant, I think.
I was just going to say, I'm getting a little bit better in the last year of seeing things that are going to fit the category of what you just said as autistic compliment, or like, I knew that was going to sound funny to someone like you who sees how it's both fine for us to say to each other, but not fine for us to say to someone else.
Yeah.
Right? Because I was like, okay, this guy is going to understand that. Whereas if I just said that to my wife, she would get me and not be upset, because she's awesome, but she would not probably think it's that funny.
Yeah.
That's what I mean about this place you've created. I can not, I'll still be polite, and I'm not going to like try to hurt anyone's feelings or say anything really controversial, accidental. Yeah. But like, I can also say that you are not annoying, and you'll think, oh yeah, that's true. That's good. Right? Normally I'd have to spend a spoon and a half thinking, what I want to say is that they're not bothering me and they're really great to talk to. And how would I say that in the right tone of voice so that they would receive it correctly?
Yeah.
And I have to remember to look them in the eye for only so much time, but for that time. And I have to say it in a different way. So I would translate it through my emulator to come out as, you guys are nice to talk to.
Yeah.
And then I'd have to say, oh, right. Guys aren't supposed to say stuff like that. So I would emulate, try it again. And I'd say, yeah, I'm having fun, dude. Yeah. Or something. And it doesn't sound like a little bit of spoonery.
I fucking love talking to you, man. I fucking love it.
Yeah. You're hitting it out. So glad Ryan showed up for this one, Phil.
Yeah. Well, it's so, I do feel like doing this show and having these conversations is, like, so it's helping me find my place and helping me find my tribe and helping me, like, learn to accept myself and all this stuff and undo all that internal damage of years of guilt and shame and all this other crap. And it feels so good. I mean, I wish there was some well, this is what we're working towards, is like maybe there's a chance that this could be my job one day. Like, I just love it so much. I love talking to people like you. I love these conversations, and it's like, I just have to remember to show up for them. Thanks.
Well, you can cut this out if it's too much inside baseball and or for whatever reason, but I like, were we originally scheduled for last week? Like, do you mind if I mention that?
No. Let's bring this up.
Were we? Because, we could have been.
Yeah, actually, this is why I had a panic attack, because we had a cancellation for Phil last week, and I was like, we cannot have another one today.
Did we have one scheduled and then I didn't show up?
Well, it was just like a miss. Phil, you describe it, please.
Well, no, I actually, maybe Drew, you could, because I can't remember the details, but basically we were going to do it last week, and then maybe I emailed the night before, or like, you know, 10:05 or something, you know, after we were going to, a couple minutes after we were going to start. And I said, are we still on for today? And I just figured you guys did what I did usually do. I didn't do it this time because the stars aligned, but I was like, they've totally forgotten. And I do that all the time, so I don't care at all.
Yeah.
And if it hadn't worked today, it would have just been another funny story. It wouldn't have bothered me, because I understand.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle of a crisis where half the time, not like a personal crisis, where half the time I can't think straight. So it didn't bother me at all, but I was like, this is exactly the podcast.
You knew.
Exactly. There's a chance all three of us will forget next week.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny, like, my job is to make this so that Ryan can do this full time. I've come on because, like you, Phil, the first time I heard this show, I thought that everyone needs to hear this, and everyone will, you know, at some point in time come across hopefully this useful information. And what's actually happened this week, if I could be honest with you, is there's three or four different emails. I've created a new email just to be the freelance producer for this show. I have obviously other emails, right?
Yeah.
In that process, we've some people have fallen through the cracks. And I'll tell you this, in a neurotypical, like, I come from an advertising, you know, car commercial background. In a neurotypical world like that, you'd be burned. You'd be scolded and left out to dry. And everyone that we've had communication problems with has been, like yourself, just been so sweet. So thank you, dude.
Yeah, no problem.
We're getting the ship sailing in the right direction.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's early days, even though it's very early days. And I think a lot of things, bugs will get ironed out. But at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, in 20 years you wanted to do a 20th anniversary special for your podcast. And on that day, you'd want to, you know, I'll call in and talk to you for a minute, and I'll forget to call, or you'll forget to do a 20th anniversary. Like, a lot of bugs get worked out, but probably not all of them, right?
But our ratings don't go down. People that are listening to this show are like, this is real.
Yeah, we'd be like, well, if we hit that many years, it'd be amazing. But I could totally see that hitting your, like, year 21 and going, wait a minute, is this year 21? should we have done a thing for the 20th year? Should we have done that?
Yeah.
If we, knock on wood, if we get there, who knows? But
inspired me. You guys inspired me. I just jotted something down. I'm going to, because I feel safe. I'm going to read it to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's an energy equation to this autism we're facing, mostly frustrating. I'm reworking the terms, trying to make my life liberating.
There you go.
Can you say that again?
There's an energy equation to this autism we're facing, mostly frustrating. We're reworking the terms, trying to make life liberating.
Yeah.
That was based on basically what you guys have been telling me. I experienced this on a very... I think as you described, Phil, like, you know, I think I experienced it in some ways harshly, but I think people that have, you know, autism full on, they definitely feel these things way more full on. And when I wrote that, I was really just thinking about your guys' conversation. It wasn't coming from me. Just like, obviously I feel these things, and and I am a part of this community. I just know that people suffer much more than me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What you just said is true, because obviously a burn victim has a far worse time of it than I'm having right now. However, what I've been trying to do, and is it's easy for me to tell you this, it's not easy for me to live this, so I'm being hypocritical here, but what I hope you hear is that other people's suffering is ultimately irrelevant when you are trying to consider your own life.
Yeah.
And you probably know that too, but maybe we can just remind each other once in a while that I don't know if you are diminishing your own experience or anything, but don't, because I very recently, like as in the last week or two, kind of decided, you know, I should probably stop hating myself. I'm just too tired to actively pursue hating myself. I'm just so burned out. But then I realized I've kind of always said, at least I have all of my fingers and I've never been tortured in Syria, and all those things are true. And thank God they are true for me. But I wouldn't wish what I've gone through on anybody at the same time. And Drew, I guess someone said, I don't know who it was, I can't remember. I've been reading, listening to so many things lately on YouTube, but be grateful for the things you have, and something like maybe mourn or regret or be real about the suffering that you have. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And go ahead, Rat.
No, you talk.
No. It's your show.
You go, you talk.
It's your show.
Go ahead. Say what you're going to say.
I think I'm, as I learn more about this, Phil, I want you to know that, I appreciate the way you've come on. You've come on and you've been like so real, as the vast majority of our guests are, about your experiences. And I only edited what I wrote and read to you guys out of respect for people that, you know, are suffering more than me. And it's not out of, like, I want you to know that I want to look this suffering down in the eye and get to the bottom. But I do appreciate your, because I think for a long, long time I was diminishing this whole thing.
Yeah.
I was, and you're correct about that.
Well, yeah. You know what I noticed too, like I was having a conversation maybe a month ago with my best friend, and he was like, they just bought a house. He and his wife, they have a toddler and a baby. They just bought a house. They're in the middle of renovating. They're living with his wife's parents while they're renovating the house they just bought. They own another house and they've got some issues with the tenants there. And he was in the middle of, like, he just got laid off from his job and took a new job, but then got hired for another job and couldn't decide which job, but he just got this big severance money from this other job. And he's talking to me and he's like telling me he's like really stressed out because I got these tenants and I got to do these rentals and we're living with the in-laws and blah blah blah, and I just started this new job but I got this other job offer and I can't decide which to go. And then he stops himself and he's like, he knows, like, I'm laid off right now, I'm living on EI, I'm going through a divorce, I'm in a lot of debt, like all this and he stops himself and he goes like, oh, he's like, dude, I'm sorry, I sound like an asshole, like I've got, like, this is just all the stuff I'm talking about, like, and you have real, and I was like, dude, that's your life, man, we can't compare, you can't be like your problems are worse than mine, or it's,
yeah,
like, I'm your friend, I want to hear about your life. I want you to tell me about, if you're stressed out, that's a real feeling. You don't just feel all that stress and then look at someone else and go, oh, I'm not allowed to feel this stress because I look at you and I feel like your stress might be worse. It's like, no, this is your life. It's real. Don't ever apologize for telling me what you're going through, because I love you and you're my friend and I want to hear about it. And it's real for you. And it's real for me to hear about it. It's real stress. Like, I'm sure fucking Bill Gates has a stressful day sometimes. It's not real because he has money. He's not stressed about some of the same things a lot of regular people are, but it's like, I don't know. You can't really compare and diminish life. I mean, again, you have to be realistic. Yes, somebody who's being tortured in Syria is going through something that I probably will never understand. So that is a real thing, but you know, I don't know how to finish wrapping up what I was just saying there, but you know what I mean?
I do. Yeah. You nailed it. Yeah.
I think you nailed it, right? Because like your friend, if he just acts like everything's cool, then you have a misconception of the relationship because this guy never has stress apparently.
Yeah.
So he's just doing his voicing his stress. He's just being real. So I think.
And then if he's not telling me his stress and we're just doing like bullshit small talk, I don't want to do that.
I had friendships end like that because, like Phil was saying, for so long I was masking all of my problems, acting like I was everything was hunky dory when it wasn't.
Yeah.
And I'd have people say to me like, "Why don't you ever have issues?"
Yeah. Exactly.
Why don't things bother you?
Yeah. Well, what else, Phil? Is there anything else you want to talk about today? Or you got
to
go make.
Yeah, sure. There was, and I totally I was just about to say it, but then I looked and saw a party hat, and I started thinking about the colors on it. Now I don't know what it was.
Hey,
I don't even know why this is in the office.
What's that?
I don't know. Now give me 10 seconds. If it doesn't come then, we can just say goodbye.
Can we ask him the magic pill question?
What's that?
Can we ask Phil the magic pill question? I don't know if we asked him.
Oh, yeah, but I think he was just about to say something.
Oh, sorry, my bad.
No, I was just about to say it didn't come to me, so it probably wasn't super important.
Okay, well, we can always do a part two later if you want.
Sure.
We've had a couple people on now where we've done a part two where they'll come on and have like a specific list of things they wanted to chat about, which was kind of interesting. Obviously part one is usually just kind of a getting to know you kind of thing, getting to know your scenario. But the magic pill question. Oh yeah. So this has just ended up becoming a thing every time we ask. The magic pill question is, if there was a magic pill you could take that would cure or remove autism, would you take?
Yeah. It's so far out that you're asking me this because I was listening to your podcast when you asked someone that just after I had finished watching the movie The Matrix.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The, like, red and blue pill thing.
Yeah.
Wow. Actually, it really stuck with me because it was like reinforced by the movie. And first of all, thanks for asking this and making it, I know for some people it would be, they would choose to become really upset at even the thought of the question. And for me, I would say yes. I would definitely want to do that because it has been such a rough ride.
Yeah.
But if I answer, hopefully I can come out of this burnout and this really hard, dark place I am in. And once I'm out of it in a couple of years and think, not a couple of years, but when I'm out of it in a couple of years,
yeah.
Maybe I'll be able to say no.
Yeah. I appreciate that answer.
Well, we're here for you, bro. If you ever need us, not even on the podcast, like, we're here, reach out, and you're now a part of the family.
Thanks, man.
The TLA. One day we'll have t-shirts.
We can't get matching tattoos because then we wouldn't be autistic.
Well, that's right.
Oh, thanks for doing this, you two. It was a lifeline for me. I went through episodes 1 to 9, like back to back last year, something, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I'm going to keep up with listening to it because it's such a good connection. I don't know anyone else who in my little circle who is like me, and it's great to know there's other people out there, and just to be able to hear and kind of, obviously it validates my existence. So thanks.
Well, yeah. Thank you. That everything you just said, I could say right back to you, because I appreciate this conversation, man. I really have a lot of respect for the way you articulated your ideas and how you presented them, and your honesty and openness. It's been really an honor to talk to you, and that's like I really mean that.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Yeah. Thanks. That's not a guy thing I'm supposed to say. I'm supposed to say, yo, dude, that was a good conversation, yo. Thanks, man.
Yes. Yeah, I forgot to be tough for a minute, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, go sports. And
yo, guys, shut up. I love you both, okay?
See if you can lower my voice a half octave. And
yeah. We'll bring us all down. Yo, word. All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your day, man. Have fun sledding with your kids and making chili and all that stuff. And God, I feel like there's so many things I'd love to ask you. And I really hope we can do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Yeah, anytime.
Right on. All right. Thanks. All right.
So, have a great day, man.
See you guys.
Peace.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.